Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Stand up for your rights. Good morning. This is Joanne Bowman and my guest co-host,
Dave Mazza.
It's a pleasure to be with you today. You're listening to Voices from the Edge. We have a wonderful guest today. Would you like to?
Well, yeah, you know, we should be audience? Sure. We should be thinking about the fact that next week is Mardi Gras, and so it seems appropriate to do a little update on what's been going on in New Orleans since Katrina swept through. And so we have with us today Daniel Terrace, who's a photographer and filmmaker. He's been down in New Orleans from September through New Year's, checking out what happened and recording it for an upcoming film. And he's here this morning to talk to us about that. Good morning, Daniel.
Good morning, Dave. Good morning, Joanne. Thank you very much for having me here today.
It's a pleasure to have you here. So August 28th was the day that Katrina hit New Orleans, and I think it's really safe to say that New Orleans will probably never, ever be the same again.
That's very easy to say. I mean, no matter what degree of reconstruction and rebuilding takes place, and regardless of the pace at which it takes place, even if it was in full swing today, it will not be the same city. Considering it probably won't be a decade before New Orleans is reconstructed, there's no chance it will be anything like its former self.
And so we should probably start at the beginning. Why did you go to New Orleans? You weren't living in New Orleans, right? You're a Portlander.
I'm a Portlander. I've been down to New Orleans several times. A woman who is a film student at California State Monterey, she is from Louisiana. Her name is Estee Blanchard. And she was born in the Bayou, lived in New Orleans and throughout Louisiana. And when the storm took place, she was about to drop out of school to return back to Louisiana to help her friends and family recover. And her school said, hey, you know what? Why don't you go down? We'll give you an independent study. Don't drop out. Make a documentary film.
Oh,
and
wow.
So she put together a big crew with the help of some friends down in San Francisco, a crew, very big fundraising events. We raised over $10,000. And we drove cross-country in a 1968 converted Greyhound bus. It was an old green tortoise bus.
Oh,
and we
wow.
drove cross-country, and we arrived in Louisiana just as Hurricane Rita
was
coming to town.
Wow.
So I would not overstate it and say we became survivors ourselves. Mm-hmm. However, we did have to live off the land at a friend's land, digging latrines, no power, water from a well for about 10 days.
So you were down there, what, about 3 weeks after Katrina hits?
Yes.
How much access were you able to get to the city? I mean, were you restricted at all?
Yes. At first, you had to pass through National Guard and police checkpoints to get in. And the only people they would let in were either people who had press or if you were a construction worker or somehow federal or state. There were several times where we did get turned around at the checkpoints, and there were other times where we had to totally fudge our way, and we actually talked our way in to the city. It was almost like it basically had to sneak in to New Orleans. It was a little bit exciting, actually, to lie our way through checkpoints.
503-231-8187 is the number to call.
we're talking to Daniel Terrace, who has just recently returned from New Orleans and has developed a film called...
It's called A Hurricane Hits Home. Film Katrina, A Hurricane Hits Home. That's the working title right
mm-hmm,
now.
Mm-hmm. And so, I think what we want the listening audience to know is kind of what you saw. What were your personal observations? Kind of what was it like to be there for the period of time you were there?
Okay. Well, I've traveled to almost 30 countries. Mm-hmm. I've been a lot of the developing world. And I can assure you that there's never been anything quite like this. I mean, people say, well, there's never been a disaster like this in the United States.
Right.
There's really never been a disaster like this almost anywhere. I mean, people, even news anchors who went down there said, you know, I've been to Baghdad, I've been in the tsunami region, but I've never seen anything quite like this.
Mm.
And does anybody know how large the state of Oregon is?
How large it is?
How many square feet? Square miles?
No. I don't want to guess.
Okay, 98,000 square miles.
Oh, okay.
90,000 square miles were flooded during Katrina.
Uh-huh.
So, if you were to look at a map of Oregon and uh-huh. you see water covering the entire thing except perhaps Burns or the corner of Oregon. So, if you
That's
can just
nice
imagine
visual. Thank you.
You know, it's very hard to actually comprehend. You know, you see it on right. the news and you hear it and you read about it, but to actually comprehend, you really need to go down there and just drive
mm-hmm.
hour after hour after hour. After hour, it is a ghost town,
mm.
even today.
So is there one particular image that's kind of burned into your memory that keeps recurring?
Absolutely. One of the things, maybe you've seen it on TV, is the number of cars that were flooded in New
mm-hmm.
Orleans. And then
mm-hmm.
the ones that were flooded, they had these brown lines all around in this pasty film over the entire car.
Right.
Well, one time we were driving into New Orleans, and I saw a flatbed truck coming out of New Orleans. And on the back of the flatbed, there was a hearse that had been flooded.
Ooh.
And so it was, you know, when you're taking a hearse out mm-hmm. on a flatbed that had been flooded, that it just, if there's a single moment that encapsulates everything I saw, uh-huh. that was it. A hearse being dragged out of town.
Ooh.
It was heavy.
Wow.
I was driving, so I didn't get a picture of it.
Right. Yeah, well, we don't want you taking pictures and driving at the same time. That's not a good thing. Now, it had to be a really emotional experience to be in New Orleans at a time when millions of people have been displaced. So, and you were there for about a 3-month period of time. So during that time, what changes happened for the better? I mean, it's like, okay, so we've got 2 million people living somewhere else. Did you get any sense that that the government actually had some vision or some plan about what the next steps are?
It's a great question. I'd love to give you a real positive answer. I'd love to give you any answer, but I can't. I can honestly say that in my 3.5 months there, mm-hmm. and I do want to say I wasn't there by myself. I was with a woman named Estee Blanchard. She's the director of the film.
Right.
I would say that we saw very little progress.
Mm-hmm.
We saw very little in the way of something to grant a ray of hope.
Uh-huh.
We saw very little in the way of organized progress.
Mm-hmm.
We saw very little in the way of glimmers of light.
Mm-hmm.
The only glimmer of light, I would say, is in the people itself.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about any programs or the Red Cross or people coming to help. It's really been the individual people who have lost everything, lost family members. They're dispersed all around the country. But they have a certain spirit
mm-hmm.
and a certain resilience that I've not ever seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And it's part of that resilience and spirit that is the spirit of New Orleans. And the spirit not only just New Orleans, but Louisiana, Mississippi. And that's really the only sense that I get of a hope, but also helps me reflect on what's being lost
mm-hmm.
when you have a population and a culture with that degree of intensity and history and depth of culture.
Mm-hmm.
When that's being lost in a country like ours, there's not a whole lot left
mm-hmm.
in terms of a real deep, authentic culture in America. So it makes me pretty upset.
So just talk a little bit about the fact that Mardi Gras starts next week. And I feel torn because on one hand, you know, you're hearing from, you know, government officials that we need to get back to normal and we need to have a successful Mardi Gras and we need to have lots of people coming in and participating. But on the other hand, I can't leave the place of 2 million people being displaced, living all across the country with no real knowledge about when or if they're ever going to be able to call home again. And so for me, it's like I'm really torn. I don't know whether I should be saying, well, yeah, we should be going to pump money into the economy, or we shouldn't put a penny into that economy until people are held accountable for making sure that the people with the least voice are at the table to help with the rebuilding process. So I haven't been there. So what's your opinion on that?
I would say your concerns are right on target, highly justified, and perfect. On the one hand, most of the economy of New Orleans has been lost.
Right.
The city is bankrupt. Mardi Gras is the equivalent. This is the example I would say. It would be almost like canceling Christmas because there was an explosion in the Vatican. The Vatican was destroyed, so let's cancel Christmas around the world. Mm. Nobody celebrate this year because there was a real hard, terrible event at the heart of our religion. So you don't cancel Christmas. Mm. You continue on with Christmas. Mardi Gras is not just, I mean, it's become in many respects very visible sense of debauchery and drunkenness and revelry, but it's a very core part of the culture down there, and it's the only thing that people have right now that is like on the calendar that is a sense of motion, passage of time, tradition, history, and from what I understand, it's a real sense of people down there are sharing the same thing. Mm-hmm. Some people are very angry, saying, how can you put any time and energy into Mardi Gras when I don't have a house, when my kids don't have clothes?
Right.
And I certainly understand that, and they are correct.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, the city's bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
They need money. A huge proportion of the income from New Orleans is from tourism.
Right.
Now, if you lose tourism,
mm-hmm.
on top of all the other losses, you're going to have a serious problem getting any reconstruction effort, anything to help revitalize the city.
Do you think it's realistic to expect New Orleans to pull itself out of this through just pumping, you know, the economic system? I mean, are we really looking at a situation where, under a different administration, we would be seeing infusions of large amounts of federal funds to do rebuilding?
Well, we've seen a tremendous amount of money being appropriated and dedicated. My only concern is how it's been spent.
Right.
You can say we've spent $80 billion on the reconstruction efforts.
Right.
I'd like to see the receipts.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to see the books.
Right.
I'd like to know that somebody is looking at those books and those receipts to find out where's that money going. Because when I was down there, you might as well not have seen a dime from the government.
Well, you know, probably if you went on a hunting trip with Dick Cheney, he could tell you where the money's going.
Be nice. but, you know, you just raised an excellent question, because there was a congressional panel that was put together to evaluate Katrina. And my understanding is it was a bipartisan panel initially, but the Democratic members of that panel decided not to participate because they just figured it was going to be a whitewash, right?
True,
that nobody was really going to look in detail. No one was really going to point fingers in the most appropriate place. But what was surprising was, so the Democrats didn't participate. There were 14 Republican congressional members who did. And those 14 members came out with a unanimous report that basically blamed everybody for what happened or didn't happen with Katrina. You know, it certainly put a lot of blame on Homeland Security, which was an appropriate place, I think, to put a lot of the blame. It certainly put a lot of blame on the lack of response from the White House when it was clear that they had more than enough warning to have actually made something happen prior to Katrina hitting. They certainly put enough blame on the state of Louisiana for their non-response and their inability to actually impact the situation as it was getting worse and worse. And last but not least, on the city and county government in New Orleans, who clearly were not prepared, and the preparation that they made was clearly not sufficient for what the needs were. And so the good news is that there's certainly they certainly did a very concerted effort to make sure that they didn't leave anybody out who had some responsibility for the lack of action after Katrina happened, which I found actually heartening. I didn't think that anything would come out of this administration that actually would be an honest, straightforward approach to this was the problem and this is what we need to fix it. But I also have to say what came out of that report for me that was most troubling is the reality is that now we've lived all this time since 9/11. We supposedly are safer today and are ready to respond in case of an emergency. And what Katrina showed us vividly was that we are less able to respond today than we would have been before 9/11 because of this whole Homeland Security. Nobody knows what Homeland Security's real responsibility is. And if you need to ask, then you need to wait for them to respond to tell you whether or not they're responsible. And so we've just got this, because of this new government administration, everybody thinks that they're doing something. And as we found out with Katrina, they weren't. So the good news is that this report, you know, people are talking about Katrina. As we talked before the show started, it's been over 6 months. And for most people, Katrina is just one of those bad memories, and they're not,
right.
You know, it's not impacting their day-to-day life, so people are not thinking about or talking about it or doing the kind of organized effort that's necessary to hold our government accountable to make sure that the rebuild actually benefits the people most impacted.
Right. And one of the shocking things is that there are three, I guess they were called the three most grave events that could take place in the United States from a Homeland Security standpoint. One was a terrorist attack in New York.
Right.
Number two was the flooding of New Orleans.
Right.
And number three, I believe, is an earthquake in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got two down.
Right.
And a total failure in both respects.
That's a very good point.
And I went, when I left New Orleans, I first went to Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
and then I went to San Francisco. And I was having a little bit of PTSD, post-traumatic symptoms, where I was projecting the visuals of things I saw in New Orleans onto San Francisco, flood lines and
uh-huh.
buildings down. And I thought to myself, boy, oh boy, I got nervous when I was in San Fran because I thought the people in San Francisco, they might be thinking about it
uh-huh.
if they were prepared. But there's a program in San Francisco that says, you know, be prepared to be without help for 72 hours.
Uh-huh.
I'm thinking that should be 720 hours.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, at the minimum, you uh-huh. should be prepared for uh-huh. 72, if not more.
Uh-huh.
It's really good to see a report like it's just 397 page report came out yesterday, mm-hmm. highly critical of the response from top to bottom.
Mm-hmm.
My concern is that this is back in the news for a very short time.
Mm-hmm.
It pops up, the potato gets passed around,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to be within a week, people will again forget about what's happening in New Orleans. And in fact, the truth is, when you see those testimonies and you hear all about that, they're just talking about what's going on in Washington. They're not talking about what's happening on the ground. They're talking about how to prepare for the next event
right.
when we haven't finished cleaning up and handling the serious situation of the current event.
Right.
And that's a real concern to me, is that people are going to get caught up in the blame game, caught up in being hot on the Bush administration for their failings, which they deserve. But let's stay focused on the most important thing, which are the individual people, the individual families that are down south that are struggling today. Let's not move ahead. We need to plan for the future, absolutely. And the foremost thing I would say is if you live in a disaster-prone area, be prepared to build a community, have a strong community now. Build your infrastructure of what you would do in an emergency now,
mm-hmm.
not waiting until the event takes place and then you're left scrambling. You think looting was a problem just in New Orleans?
Mm-hmm.
What happens if there's a 9 earthquake in San Francisco mm-hmm. and the place is completely flattened? You're going to see behavior like you've never seen. It's just people are trying to survive.
Well, let's talk about looting since you brought it
sure.
up, because that was the picture that most people saw of New Orleans immediately after Katrina. But as more time passed, what we realized was it depended on what color skin you had.
Right.
It depended on how the editorial board of whatever newspaper was publishing
right.
decided to frame that picture. We talked earlier about a AP Wire picture that circulated shortly after
yes.
Katrina. One picture, young African-American kid in the water, waist deep, with a bag of food on his shoulder. Headline reads, looters scour New Orleans. Next picture, two 30-something white appear upper-middle-class people, same knee-deep water, same picture, bag of food over their shoulder, survivors scavenge for food.
Right.
You know, and so I don't want to leave that looting statement out there without acknowledging that what I've heard since those initial pictures was that in most cases, we didn't have like, we didn't, in New Orleans, people weren't walking down the street with TV sets and refrigerators on their back. Most of the people were looking for food,
bottled water,
and basic medical supplies for survival. So, you know, the difference between a riot where people
right.
are looting because they think they can get something for free, and people who have been stranded for days with no government assistance.
Right. Well, there's a yes and a no to that.
Okay.
There were many people who went and stole things like flat-screen TVs, Game Boys, Xboxes, electronics, things like that. And most people were thinking, you know, what in the world are you going to do with something like that?
Especially since you have no electricity,
no electricity
to plug it in, right?
But people were doing it. There were very highly organized gangs of people that commandeered individual buildings and had trucks going out, looting electronic stores, coming home, loading it into warehouses. I mean, we're talking like highly organized theft, highly organized looting, car, flatbed trucks driving around New Orleans, picking up cars, stealing them. Just
Well, wait a minute. Now, I heard the police were the ones that were stealing automobiles.
This is, I believe it's true that there was a certain segment of the New Orleans Police Department that went and stole, or they said commandeered, a number of Cadillac Escalades and drove them to Baton Rouge. At least they have good taste in cars. However, you know, you can't tell me that the only car you can commandeer is an Escalade.
Right.
What about a Chevy or a, you know, so.
Well, what's your take on the police? I mean, the chief obviously got hammered in the press, but overall, how did the New Orleans police handle things?
Well, the New Orleans police are notoriously a tough group.
Notoriously underpaid, underbenefit.
Mm-hmm.
They had long history of corruption, and it wasn't until just a few years ago, supposedly, they cleaned it up and raised the pay of entry-level
right,
police
right.
officers.
But even so, it's a very hard-scrabble group, real tough crew. You don't mess with New Orleans cops. If they ask you to do something, they tell you to do something, you do it. You don't say, you know, you don't try to like give them this talk of, oh, well, this is my constitutional right. They don't care. They arrest you first.
Mm.
Understandably, I mean, we spoke with some police officers that were on, you know, you probably saw pictures of thousands of people standing on an overpass.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they got five cops with 8,000 people. Now, I don't care if you're the most well-trained police officer in the whole wide world.
Mm.
You're standing there with 8,000 people who haven't eaten for 3 days.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And you want them to have this immaculate behavior.
Mm.
I mean, they were petrified,
mm-hmm.
horrified. They didn't know what was going to happen.
The police were horrified?
Oh, sure. Oh, who wasn't horrified? But if you were one of five police officers in control or designated to watch over 5,000 people, no degree of training will prepare you for an event like that. You know, I can't comment too much more on what happened with the police, except that, as they found in 9/11, there's a lack of communication hardware,
mm-hmm.
equipment, so that they could communicate. The police were having to barricade themselves in against snipers at night. The New Orleans Police Department was locking themselves down in buildings to stay safe.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. I wonder about those kind of reports because we heard so much mixed messages. I mean, clearly if you are part of an organized police force and all of a sudden you have no communication with anybody, that's a problem. You know,
that's
if you're out
problem.
In the car by yourself and that's a problem. I I want to get into the people that you were able to connect with while you were there. I want to get into kind of the personal stories that people shared with you as part of this video. But I also want to just acknowledge that depending upon where you sat during that process, you saw very different things in New Orleans. And I say you're looking at me weird, like, what is she talking about?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm not sure what you're saying.
That's okay. So what I'm saying is, like, as far as your description of the cops, you know, the cops were locking themselves in to try to protect themselves at night. The cops were on the bridge, and they were concerned because they had to guard 5,000 people. From where I sit and from the news stories that I heard, and from the devastation that I saw on that bridge, the police were there to make sure that those poor black people did not cross the bridge into this upper middle class neighborhood, because they wanted to protect those people and their property from being infiltrated by these very poor people who had nothing left because they'd lost everything and had been standing on an overpass for a couple of weeks. Yes. So it just made me a little crazy to hear you describing it as these poor cops who are there trying to protect and serve. So that's why I'm making that distinction, that it depends on where you sat, what you saw from that event. And I'm sure if you're talking to police, they're going to make the case that they were scared for their life. But, you know, they use that excuse so often, you know, I just don't quite have much empathy for, I was afraid for my life, so therefore my job was to make sure that these poor people stayed away from the rich people so that the rich people would be happy.
And before you answer, we need to remind folks that they're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM, and we're speaking this morning with Daniel Terrace, a photographer and filmmaker who spent 3.5 months down in New Orleans making a film on the effects of Hurricane Katrina. So
in the aftermath, and we have a few callers, so why don't we go to the phone line first?
Gladly. And the director may be calling in as well.
Oh, cool. Good morning, caller. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi, just as life's little ironies work out, I happened to see the front page of the New York Times Home and Garden section this morning, and the above the fold, full half-page picture of three African-American National Guardsmen planting a tree at a botanical garden in New Orleans. And I just, you know, I just took a look at the article, and it's about how this botanical garden was devastated and they were replanting it. From the flooding, it was devastated, you know, the brackish water, salt water killed all the plants, blah, blah, blah. But I just, you know, and then I kind of looked through the rest of the paper, and there was no other mention that I could find in a quick glance of New Orleans and any kind of recovery building, blah, blah, blah. So when we're talking about a full half page above the fold picture in the Home and Garden section that, hey, everything is all good and rosy in New Orleans, because look, they're, you know, these hard-working African-American National Guardsmen, the pride of our country, are replanting a botanical garden, and isn't everything just cheerio?
Well, I think that's a lovely, I mean, I think it's a great visual. I certainly could feel like there's better ways for them to be, unless if they were volunteering their time, I'd be real happy to see that. But at the same time, to jump back, if you talk to every single person, if you try to get, you know, you seemed a little miffed about what I was talking about, the cops. I've had the chance
but
to
that's
talk
me.
To. Right. And fair enough.
I'm not that.
And I'm not denying you the right to feel that way. And in many respects, you are right.
Right.
But one of the foremost things that we did was when we went down with an open agenda.
Uh-huh.
We didn't go down to make a Michael Moore-style documentary
right.
where the military is the bad guy, the police are the bad guy, the government's the bad guy, everyone's the bad guy except for the little man.
Right.
Okay. Could be true. Might not be true. He's probably right on when he does films like that. We went down with an open agenda. Tell me your story.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I want to know. Tell me your story. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, you really start to generate a greater appreciation for everybody's circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I know people who stood on those bridges that were guarded by the five cops. I talked to people who were there, and I feel very badly for them.
Mm-hmm.
I feel very badly for the five cops that had to stand on that bridge. Mm-hmm. I feel badly for the president of Jefferson Parish, who made that decision. I don't feel that bad for him, who made that decision to send out cops to keep people from crossing the bridge into his parish because he didn't want to, quote-unquote, to create another superdome in his parish. They did, in fact, prevent people, thousands of people, from crossing over into their parish. Now, everybody was shocked. Everybody, I think they were all trying to do what they thought was the right thing. It ultimately may not have been, trying to keep thousands of people, you know, stuck on a bridge for 3 to 5 days.
Who do you think was trying to do the right thing?
He was probably trying to prevent, as he said, another superdome. So he's probably, I'm not saying that they did the right thing. They certainly didn't do the right thing. But he's probably watching his own behind. He's probably thinking of his constituents. He's probably thinking, what am I going to have on my hands if I let 8,000 people into my parish? What am I going to have to deal with? He's got a lot of flack from that, and rightly so.
Caller, you still there? No, I'll call a lot. Okay, I wanted to make sure they didn't have anything else to add. 503-231-8187. I think you're absolutely right. The fact that you were there and you talked to hundreds of people gives you a perspective that myself and most people who haven't been to New Orleans don't have.
Right.
But I also want to challenge kind of what you were told, because, of course, people are going to tell you stories to put themselves in the best light possible.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And I think from the stories that made it out, because, of course, you know, the media decides what stories actually get published and actually the public gets to hear. But based on some of the stories that made it out, I don't have as much compassion for some sides of this conversation as you do.
Right.
Just because, you know, it seems to be real black and white to me. I don't see a lot of gray area. You know, people are in trouble. There's an emergency. We have a government that's supposed to respond, and they didn't. They should be held accountable, period.
Agreed.
So, you know, that's kind of where I am. But let's go back to the phone line. Good morning, caller. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to make just a comment on that other one. It's in my understanding of America and its sense of compassion and helping the poor, and that here were our own people mm-hmm. that were in a disaster, and neighboring communities are supposed to be the resource to reach out
right.
and help and give aid
right.
and not stand out, you know, afraid with guns and things like that. The other question I have is, I read on the internet news that there were over 1,200 children still missing, and I haven't read that in the major news, mm-hmm. and I wonder if there's any other information out there that validates that. A lot of the children were put on buses, and the parents were not allowed to get on the buses.
That's
they were
right.
told that they were going to the same place, and your kids would be safe, and then the buses dispersed in many, many different places. And I heard that the missing children's organization is actually trying to track down these 1,200 children.
That's a great question. Have you heard anything about that, Dana?
I have. I mean, it goes along with the undefined final death tally
mm-hmm.
for Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
Is people were willy-nilly and haphazardly sent out on planes and buses across this country.
With no clue where they were going.
With no clue where they were going, not necessarily having any of their friends and family knowing where they're going.
Right.
So, in fact, there are a lot of people missing. Now, some may be dead. Some may be deliberately hiding. What a great time to disappear. If you've got, say, very high alimony payments, or if you've got, you know, there's a lot of reasons, like people after 9/11, some people just disappear, presumed dead, but nobody knows. Now, on the other hand, there are a lot of people who have not checked in with FEMA, that they have either they don't know, they don't have the resources, or they haven't checked in. So out of that 1,200 children that are missing, you know, how many are dead? How many have been who are involved in perhaps a custody battle and are trying to remain off the radar? There's no knowing. And so there's a lot of confusion as to how many are missing, kidnapped, dead, or are just doing perfectly fine, enrolled in school in Columbus, Ohio, and adjusting to the new lives perfectly well.
So who's responsible for figuring out where everybody is?
There's been a lot of, I believe it's a FEMA I believe it's a FEMA responsibility. Of course, they didn't do a very good job. There's a lot of, you know, Red Cross. There's a lot of websites dedicated to connecting people. You know, you put your name in there and you sign up, and then your relatives can go. But a lot of people are maybe technologically savvy.
Right.
Where they don't have cell phones. They don't have computers. Mm-hmm. There's people still in shelters.
What was the last head count we saw in the press?
About 1,200 dead between Mississippi and Louisiana. About 1,200 is the final tally, and that's just bodies that they have confirmed dead. There are 300,000 houses were destroyed during Katrina, and most of those have not been cleaned up. And it may be a little bit grisly, but there are definitely people still buried in cars,
no doubt,
under rubble.
No doubt.
Hundreds and hundreds. I don't know. I don't think at a certain point it was like with the Trade Center. You know, they were searching for bodies as they were cleaning up, and after like a month, they just said, you know what, the hell with it, just pile everything into the trucks and take it to the dump. Mm-hmm. And at a certain point, that's probably going to happen as well. The scope of the cleanup is so tremendous that at a certain level, you're just going to have to come in with bulldozers. If there's remains in there, those remains are going to be taken out too.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. Good morning, caller. Welcome to K-Boot. Hello?
Hello.
Welcome to K-Boot.
Thank you. I had a question for your guest, and it's based on what you've seen. We know that most people tend to have a lack of concern when it's usually minorities, and it's not affecting what we see as like the important people in our population. Do you believe that there is a double standard in the treatment, and that if we were talking about Beverly Hills, do you believe we'd be having the same conversation?
Well, I think that the attention span of the typical American is very, very short. I think if there was a big disaster in Beverly Hills, I also think that Beverly Hills is a tough question. I do think there's a double standard. There's certainly a double standard. But to say that people were treated differently because they were black, I don't know. Was this an organized, was there deliberate neglect on the part of the responders because there were minorities? I don't know. There's a lot of suspicion and reason to believe that there is an organized effort, especially in the reconstruction.
There's a saying, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you.
Yes, exactly. That's a great point. I don't know. I can say that that many of the minorities that I spoke to certainly feel. Now whether it's, you know, never mind my opinion. I'm going to tell you what I heard from the people on the street, and that's why we're down there, and that's why I'm on the radio right now. So you can hear what they're saying, because you can't be down there, and the media is not really covering it.
Right.
People are very suspicious about what happened. The residents, specifically of the lower Ninth Ward, feel like, many of them feel that the levee, the Industrial Canal levee, was deliberately blown up in order to flood their neighborhood. Their neighborhood is 100% destroyed. It's one of the most historical neighborhoods in all of New Orleans. It is a rich cultural environment, and they believe that they have been flushed out deliberately, and people also believe that they are delaying the rebuilding process because the longer people stay away from New Orleans, the less likely they are to come home. So there's a lot of suspicion, and I feel myself that there is a deliberate attempt to delay the reconstruction, because a lot of people would prefer if that 60% of the black population did not come home, and at this point in time, the majority of them have not come home. The ones that have come home, they're yelling at me on the camera. Not at me, but they're yelling at the camera saying, you told me to come home, and I'm home. And there's nowhere for me to live. I have no food. I'm getting no assistance. Where's FEMA? Where's the Red Cross?
Right.
I've got no place to live. You want me home? Give me a reason to be home. And people are turning around their cars and going back to Atlanta, going back to Houston. They've given it a shot. They say, I'm going to go home. New Orleans is my home. Mm-hmm. And they get there. They're like, you know what? You don't want me here. You're making no effort to keep me here.
Because if you have no job, right, no place to live, the schools aren't functioning, why would anybody go back to a community that they can't get some basic level they can't have some basic level of livelihood.
Unless you're expecting people to live in tents.
Right.
Or in their cars, which people are, many people are living in cars because they have no place else to go.
Well, see, now that's the part I want to get to in a little bit, because, so here we are 6 months out. For all intents and purposes, we've got, still have about 2 million people dispersed all across the country that have been displaced. Most of the people that lost everything were people that were not homeowners or business owners or people with wealth. So, you know, people had what they had when they left. And so they're all over the country. I mean, how would you even, I mean, if you're living in, I mean, they got folks in Utah, Seattle, Portland, Oregon, all these folks all over the country, how would they even know when's the right time to come back, who to connect with, what the process is, should I pull my kid out of school now and mm-hmm. get in the car and head back to New Orleans? What's the process of even educating people all over the country about the status? Is somebody responsible for doing, like, weekly updates on where we are and what's the next step?
Well, Brownie's doing a good job on that, you know.
He's doing an excellent job as a disaster consultant now, working out of Colorado where they don't have disasters. Isn't that interesting? He just sets up shop in Colorado. You know? Dave, did you have a question?
Well, I was just to Elvegian.
Yeah. And I was going to say, then add to that the pressure on these people of FEMA turning the tap off in terms of funds and being told folks are going to have to look at local resources.
Right. Now, and if you remember, they were going to do it. The deadline was before Thanksgiving,
mm-hmm.
right? And some federal hotshots figured probably not a good time to put people on the street just before Thanksgiving.
Right.
So they extended it again. And then it was like just before Christmas, right?
Right.
So again, you know, fat cats in D.C., probably wouldn't be too good thing, right? So then they pushed it till after the first of the year. So now we're on another fast and firm timeline where
This one, however, looks like the final cut. I believe by March 1st, I mean, I know that 12,000 families did just have their funding cut yesterday or the day before.
Where? From where?
Nationwide.
Nationwide.
Hotel payments from FEMA. 12,000 families just a couple of days ago. And there are people who are back in their cars, who are living under bridges, who are now homeless with children, wandering around.
So what do you think the responsibility of the rest of us is for all these people who are living in hotels that now are going to be homeless and are going to be asked to compete with other homeless and low-income people and local communities for very few precious resources? Okay. What's our role in fixing that?
The first thing I want to clarify is that, you know, Katrina hit everybody. It wasn't just the African-American communities. It wasn't just the poor communities. There are $3 and $4 million houses that are underwater. They call it the equalizer. Katrina hit everybody. Now, the aftermath, however, is where the difference comes in and how people have the abilities to recover. The more money you have, the more insurance you have, the more well-off your family is, the more likely you are to be able to rebuild, relocate, be in schools, be in a new home.
And not be stopped trying to cross police lines
and
to get out of the
stopped.
City.
And not be stopped. You know, if you were white, you could probably drive in and out of the city. And people did that. You know, independent rescue groups just drove, you know, white mm-hmm. teenagers driving in full of supplies. But anyhow, like, for example, you know.
But there was only one parish that was 100% destroyed.
Well, Orleans Parish. No, that's not true. You have St. Bernard's Parish, which is east of New Orleans.
Uh-huh.
You have Plaquemines Parish, which is south of New Orleans. Both of those have almost 100% home loss. Those places were, especially St. Bernard Parish and most of Mississippi, was about 20, 30 feet underwater
mm-hmm.
with 160-mile-an-hour winds. But
we'll talk about what those places have in common in a few minutes, but
okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. The Lower Ninth Ward catches a lot of flack and has a really bad reputation, but it also had a 60% home ownership rate.
Hmm?
It's just that a lot of people don't have insurance. And then, even if they did have insurance, the insurance companies are not coughing up.
Right.
So to say that everybody who is now displaced is helpless, homeless, poor, doesn't really reflect the reality of the situation. That is certainly true that there are people like that. But like I said, 60% of the people from the Lower Ninth Ward were homeowners, and those homes have been passed down through generation after generation after generation. So I don't want everyone to get the feeling that everybody who left New Orleans is, you know, is penniless, destitute, and is, you know, no excuses for what happened. But also, I'm just, what's important to me is to present as many facts that I saw as possible, and to try to remain a little bit unemotional, so that I can see really what's going on and leave the judgment up to the viewers of the movie. Mm-hmm. Like I said, we're going down there to catch the authentic stories and to not try to get caught in blaming. I just feel like it's counterproductive when what really needs to happen is for the individual families and the individual people of the Gulf region to have their stories told. It's a catharsis for them to be able to tell their story, to have them feel like somebody is listening and like somebody cares. They've had the government come in and try to help them. They've had the Red Cross try and come in and help them. But one of the nicest things that we've heard over and over again is people walk up to us and say, "We want to thank you for coming down here with your camera and for listening to my story." Mm. And they're grateful for that opportunity because everybody else has disappointed them. We're just coming down there to hear them, to lend an ear, to deliver some relief supplies, keeping it simple. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the foremost things I want to remind people, is that there are individuals down there who are suffering still today, people living in cars, living in tents, no medical supplies, running out of food, cold, hungry. And let's try not to get too caught up in FEMA did this, George Bush said that. It's easy, it's a great target. I could spend eons
and
hours doing
that. See, I have to disagree with you, Daniel, because, and it's not a blame game, it's accountability.
It's accountability, yes,
thank you. It's ensuring that the law is administered in an equal manner to every citizen.
Right.
And what we have here, I think, is conduct that not only borders on criminal, is criminal. And I think that if we were in a system right now that hadn't had its justice system so perverted by the current administration's past administrations, we would see people being hauled in front of judges right now for what occurred, Brownie being probably at the top of the list.
Right.
I guess that you are right. you are right. And I guess I just feel like
I
try not to get stuck in that.
But believe me,
I hear where you come from, and you are right on target, and I'd like to see all those guys hot on the griddle.
The role you're playing is an important
one in
bringing these stories forward, because you are giving voice to people who are getting little or no voice or being horribly misrepresented in the mainstream press. So don't get me wrong. I'm not being critical of that. I just think that I hear too much from reporters. We don't want to get into the blame thing.
I agree.
And I don't want to either. I want accountability.
That's the Bush administration. We don't want to blame. We just want to move forward.
Well, if
you aren't accountable for what's already taken place, right, and then if you're not accountable for the promises you made after 9/11, you promised Americans that we were ready for an emergency.
Right.
Well, guess what? The first emergency that happened, we are so not prepared.
Very big time.
Okay, back to the phone line. Good morning, caller. Welcome to KBOO.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, this is a question about the public health system. Early on in this, I heard something that there is still a remnant of free public health that came from Huey Long in the early 30s, and a hospital in New Orleans that basically treated poor people. And the question was, how is that hospital? Is it up and running? I think supposedly there was no money for it.
I think you might be referring to a hospital called Charity Hospital. I'm not 100% sure. I do believe that they have just reopened. But you have to keep in mind that there's really not that many poor people left in New Orleans. The people who are back there and who are there have money to be there. Their homes weren't destroyed. And they've got money to make their way through this experience. So I can't say for sure. I'm not really familiar with Charity Hospital, but what I can tell you is the majority of the people who needed that charity are now spread out across the country.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. That was a really good question. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Daniel Tarris is here sharing with us his experience after spending 3.5 months in New Orleans and the surrounding area talking to survivors of Katrina and really trying to help them get their story out about their own experiences and what Katrina and the aftermath have been about. I asked you a question earlier about what is our responsibility, our, the broader community, us as community, compassionate community members, what is our role and responsibility to make sure that these people that are displaced, that don't have the ability to vote in their local elections, that won't be there to hold their political leaders accountable, what's the rest of our responsibility to make sure that those folks are, number one, not forgotten, and number two, are made whole through whatever process the federal government deems is appropriate?
Move to Canada.
Now, wait a minute. The Conservatives just took over in Canada,
yes,
so that option's out.
Canada's not looking too good right
where.
There.
Go just get your passport all signed up and ready and hit the beach.
Okay, I'm going to go back to the phone lines. This is not going to answer my question in the manner in which it was delivered. Good morning, caller. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning.
First of all, I'd just like to say that I listen to your show in the mornings a lot, and I really appreciate the perspective that you bring. It's refreshing.
Well, thank you.
And just to jump into the fray, I think what you guys are talking about in terms of New Orleans, which I followed really closely because, of course, it affected me personally very deeply, is that we had an opportunity to see on the news every night, every day, the disparity between the rhetoric of the government and its mandate to provide and protect for its people, which it completely failed to do in almost every respect. And I agree that I think that criminal negligence plays a huge role when looking at the response to the tragedy. That's not even necessarily Katrina. Katrina hit, and then we had the levees, which had a long history of being neglected financially.
Exactly.
Not being reinforced, not being redone to be effective in their job of preventing what happened. If you had a housing complex that is structurally unstable, it's been documented, funds have been provided to restructure the housing complex, there's a storm, and then 3 days later the housing complex falls down, you're going to be looking at the management and the ownership and looking at criminal negligence. And I think that it's in much, you know, of course, it's a different level, but basically the same thing. And I hear people say a lot, you know, we should be just blaming, this is a tragedy, we need to look at going forward and being positive about how we're going to respond. And I remember watching The Daily Show, I think it was, not The Daily Show, and one of these late night shows, and the host said, usually when people don't want to play the blame game, it's because they're to blame.
Very good point.
So I really think it's a situation where it's not about blame, but it is about accountability. And I think that you got people on the highest levels of government shooting each other and walking away and not getting questioned for 12, 14 hours.
I agree.
There's a lack of accountability. And so appreciate your perspective, Daniel, being there and seeing the firsthand what's going on and wanting to keep an open mind. But to me, it's very difficult to be objective on a moving train, and that's why you had Gerardo in the Superdome crying on the TV holding babies up, because it's very difficult for any human being to be objective in that type of situation. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, I can tell you part of the reason I can be a little bit more objective is, I wasn't down there at the time of the storm. I think if I was down there, if I was at the Superdome, if I was at the convention center, if I was in the middle of the storm, I think I'd be a little bit more pissed off.
Oh, yeah.
I think I'd be a little more fiery about it. I guess I try to be, the middle path, kind of Zen perspective. It's not, you know, I feel like it serves me, but, you know, I guess I'm just trying to channel the anger into productivity. And I certainly agree. You know, it's been said that, you know, Katrina was a natural disaster. Everything that's happened ever since then has been a human disaster.
That's right.
And we can say it's bad enough. Everything that happened during Katrina was bad enough. Mm-hmm. But the fact that it's still going on, the fact that it's still really screwed up, now they're starting to uncover the no-bid contracts, $100 million no-bid contracts to Bechtel. $100 million no-bid contracts 2 days after the storm.
Well, yeah, and they did. What's the other company that gets all the federal dollars?
Halliburton.
Halliburton, thank you.
Yes.
You know,
Halliburton has a $500 million contract to rebuild the naval bases down there. So that's, I don't believe that there's a new contract with them for this, but.
Actually, there was a couple of days right after the hurricane. That was the first one that was announced, was Halliburton had got the contract to rebuild New Orleans.
Okay.
And so it's like, weren't they a little tied up? Aren't they busy?
I think they're pretty busy.
I thought so, too.
So, you know, I really agree with the issue of accountability. I mean, you say you're spending $80 billion, $100. I want to see receipts.
Right.
When I'm down there, I see no visible evidence.
Now, one of the first things FEMA did spend money on was a whole bunch of trailers.
Yes.
That, to my knowledge, are still sitting stacked up somewhere in New Orleans, and no one's using them. And they just went out and bought them, again, a no-bid contract with a
Correct.
Company that makes trailers.
Yes.
And so is that still, are they still piled up somewhere?
That's still an issue. One of the things you got to keep in mind is that these are types of contracts that need to be made before a storm comes in. You need to have the services contracted. You have to have those contracts signed, lined up beforehand with plans for contingencies.
Right.
So what happens is, you know, you don't have an experience like this where they're saying, well, we were totally unprepared. We didn't expect it. Mm-hmm. Well, how about you have 100,000 trailers on back order so that you're ready? That's how it's supposed to be done. They're supposed to have these contracts so that they have the opportunity to negotiate, mm-hmm. to seek bids before the storm hits, not in the midst of a crisis, you're throwing around the checkbook, trying to save your...
I mean, let's not pretend that what the goal was to take care of the people who were displaced, okay? Let's not even go there. Let's not pretend that that was why they spent the $60 billion that they've already spent. They spent that money as a reward for people that they already had contracts with.
Very possible.
And it really, and there was no measurable outcomes in the contract. It was just another few billions of bucks on top of the other billions that we've given them. And we've already shown through their own accounting offices that the money is misspent constantly. So the old contracts, we could show that the money was misspent. And now you get another brand new contract. And Rich is telling me there's a lot of people on the phone. So I'm going to stop talking and go to the phone line. Good morning, caller. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning.
The Katrina disaster and what's happening down there in New Orleans right now is a perfect example of what happens when you allow Democrats to have power. Democrats have been running New Orleans now since Reconstruction. It is the most corrupt city in the country next to Chicago and New York, which are also run by Democrats.
So your premise, under your premise, the federal government is doing a wonderful job right now, huh?
Well, how can the federal government do anything when you're dealing with a bunch of crooks?
Well,
you know, what happened to the millions of dollars that was spent that the federal government gave to New Orleans for these levees down there? That was stolen.
It's a very important point. I mean, the troubles in New Orleans began long before what's happening now. Problems with corruption, misspending of funds. So, you know, in many respects, he's on target. There's a really long history of corruption, and that's part of the reason why, as I understand it, the federal government is more hesitant to give funds to Louisiana because there's very little accountability, and they're afraid
that
funds are going to disappear.
I'm just telling you.
Okay.
That is such BS.
However, we have to recall that the administration... The current administration was informed that the levees were reaching a critical stage months before the Katrina hit. And in fact, Earl Blumenauer, in a speech several weeks before Katrina, used those levees as an example of the administration failing to do the job it's supposed to be doing in terms of FEMA being prepared, as like you were talking about. So I agreed that there's a lot of corruption down there in New Orleans, but there's also a great deal of corruption and incompetence at the federal level, too. I personally, it's a plague on both their houses, and they all should be running.
Did you want George Bush to go down there and stick his thumb in the levee?
Well, I would like...
What you wanted?
Well,
If you're dealing with
do you want me to answer your question,
tone down,
do you want to yell at me?
Right, tone down the anger.
If you're dealing with a bunch of thieves and crooks, what are you supposed to do?
Well, wait a minute. Now, the thieves and crooks are the ones that are now controlling Congress. So I'm not quite sure what you're referring to.
No. The thieves and crooks were running New Orleans for over a century.
Okay, so we agree that there has been corruption in New Orleans for a long time. Okay, we agree with you there. So that's you're right there. But let's get to the next thing. It's not because Democrats control New Orleans.
Oh, it's not?
Well, no, it's not. It's not. It doesn't have anything to do with the political party affiliation. It's who's in charge and who's responsible. So we have a Republican-controlled Congress. We have a Republican in the White House. When a disaster hits on these shores, I have an expectation that whether I'm a Republican or not, that my government is going to respond appropriately. And in the case of Katrina, there is no level of government that responded appropriately.
Well, see, that's where you make your mistake. I have no expectation of government doing anything.
Well, then you are getting what you expect.
I have no expectation because I know Democrats are really good at talking. They're really good at having meetings. They're really good at spending other people's money, but they are not good at accomplishing anything.
Well, I mean, that's such a broad statement.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
I understand that you're pissed off, but you also have to keep in mind, and this is what I'm trying to remind people, is that you might be mad at the Democrats, you might be mad at the Republicans. The truth of the matter is that there are people suffering, and you need to rise a little bit out of your anger and around that, or channel that into a way of saying, how can I help the individual people? You know, Katrina affected this entire country. We're not just talking about the fact that they're not giving funds to Louisiana, but it's one of the most important ports in the country. It's the number of oil refineries down in Louisiana is very important to this country culturally, culinarily. There's many reasons why it is important to take care of the issues in Louisiana. And I understand, you know, your discussion of corruption, and you're right on. But what we need to keep in mind is it's not just a local issue. It's a nationwide issue because New Orleans is a part of our country, and it's a very important part of our country.
Well, you guys said that we need to hold somebody accountable.
Right.
And I am pointing fingers at who needs to be held accountable.
And who's that?
It is that corrupt Democrat political machine down there.
Okay, so what do you suggest we do with the 400 folks from New Orleans who are currently residing in the Portland metro area? How could we support them?
I think we're doing the best we can right now, aren't we?
But you don't know. I appreciate.
Well, no, I don't know what's going on in Africa. I can barely take care of myself.
So I ask you what's going on in Portland, and you tell me you don't know what's happening in Africa. You have a really good day.
Do you know what's going on?
It's been fun. It's been fun.
Do you know what's going on in Bend?
Yeah, actually, I do know what's going on in Bend.
Well,
I spent quite a bit of time reading the Bend newspaper.
Too much growth.
Have a great
Walmart.
Day. Thank you. Bye. Okay, what's coming up today on KBOO at 9? It's another pilot installation of DIY Portland. The guest is Tim Calvert, who helped to start Laughing Horse Books and helped make City Bikes into a worker-owned collective. Not a world-owned collective. Oh, interesting.
That's Tim's plan.
Okay, that's his plan, yeah. First the workers, then the world. The topic is sustaining DIY businesses in Portland. At 9:30, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. At 10, Carlos Chavez will host Chinicism. What? Chicanoism. Chicanoism. This is a pilot for the new program with guest Ramon Ramirez. That's where Ramon is. President of PACUN, to talk about immigration legislation and a new report that was released on Tuesday titled, In Our Own Words, Immigrants' Experiences in the Northwest. We'll also have an interview with film producer Esperanza. At 10:30, Julie Bernard hosts Art Focus. Her guests will be two local cartoonists, along with local artist Daniel Dufort. They'll discuss comics today. And at 11 is Democracy Now! With Georgia Representative Cynthia McKinney blasting the government for creating a new underclass of Katrina homeless. and are New Orleans evacuees being denied the right to vote? It's so nice to know when Democracy Now! Is on board with what we're trying to do.
All right.
That's what's coming up today on KBOO.
Go Team Katrina.
Yeah, and we're talking this morning with Daniel Terrace, photographer, filmmaker, who spent 3.5 months down in New Orleans, and he's giving us his firsthand account of what he experienced. And if you missed the earlier part of this conversation, he has a couple of websites you'll want to check out. One is Daniel Terrace, DanielTarras.com.
TARAS.
TRAS.
TARAS.
TARAS. I haven't had my coffee yet this morning. And Film Katrina, and Katrina spelled with a K. .com, which contains the images, I gather.
Yes, there's a link from the Film Katrina site to the, you can get to the DanielTarras.com through the Film Katrina site. The Katrina site has more information about the project, has a calendar of upcoming events, as well as places where people can look and see what supplies we need, supplies that people down in New Orleans need, and they can also donate to our project.
So I understand your director's on the line, so why don't we bring her on as well. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. So we've been talking about you quite a bit this morning.
Yeah, I've heard you guys.
Wonderful. So you are actually from the New Orleans area?
Yes.
And so this was a personal mission for you, kind of.
Yeah.
So what would you like to share with us that we either haven't asked Daniel yet or that you've been just dying to get in and respond to?
Well, I wanted to comment on something that I heard you say and just drive that home a little bit, and that's the federal response of this administration and how that they should be held accountable for what their response, and how, you know, I just want to say that, you know, it's unacceptable. You know, as Americans, we depend upon our government to take care of us in ways that we cannot. That's the whole point.
Right.
And, you know, this is just unacceptable. You know, we cannot have this happening in our country, and we all need to take responsibility as citizens and hold our administration accountable. So right on. Thank you for saying that.
You are very welcome, and it's wonderful to see that coming up later they're actually going to be talking more in detail about voting rights, because if you've got all these people displaced, then my understanding is that the deadline has passed for people to ask for absentee ballots. And so if that's passed and you've got folks all over the country, which I'm sure didn't get the notice that they needed to do something proactive to be able to vote in upcoming elections, it seems like do you know if there's anything legally that can be done to either halt the elections in New Orleans or to identify where people are so that they can participate?
I believe that they postpone them once. But I don't know anything beyond that. Estee, do you?
I don't know. But it just seems like another shot for those people, you know? I mean,
exactly.
We had these elections that happened in 2000, you know, the presidential elections where all those people got disenfranchised.
Right.
Like, here we go again.
Right,
you know?
Exactly. So do you have any advice for our listening audience? Because the thing about KBOO audience is we're a pretty activist kind of community. And so we tell people how they can help and what they can do, most will take advantage of that opportunity. So do you have any ideas or advice that you could give to our listening audience about what they can do now to support and assist the evacuees?
Yeah, most certainly. We are trying to attempt to help in ways that we can directly, because, you know, we go there and give people, hand them supplies, you know, straight to the people. And what we're trying to do is get some generators for some of the families in the Ninth Ward, because they still don't have electricity. They can't even begin to rebuild without any sort of electricity, any supplies. So if people want to help, they can help us get some generators for people down there. There's also another group called Common Ground, and they are directly helping people rebuild their houses, and there's a long waiting list too for the people, and there's just not enough volunteers, you know.
Right.
So you know, people need, they're in great need of supplies, basic stuff, you know, and then machinery to help clean up their places. Also, you know, call your state representatives and tell them, you know, we need to do more as a state, Oregon, as a country, you know. Just push it, because talk about it, because it's not, I mean, I see on the news now, since they're having all these hearings, there's a lot more about Katrina, which is good.
Right.
But I heard that Ray Nagin, the mayor, said, you know, yeah, this happened, and we're going to have to investigate and talk about it, but the tragedy is still going on. Let's talk about that.
And that is the tragedy. You just hit it right, the nail right on the head. I mean, it's pretty appalling to think that until this new congressional report came out, Katrina was off the news. Nobody was talking about Katrina. It's as if it didn't happen. And in fact, all you're hearing about is the preparation for Mardi Gras, right?
Right.
So it's this real disconnect from the reality of these, all of these people whose lives have been totally turned upside down. And all you hear out of New Orleans is, we're getting ready for the Mardi Gras, right? Because we want to put a pretty face on it. And the reality is that there are very few people who have continued on with their life as normal since Katrina.
Very few. And
well, hold on, Daniel.
Sure.
The thing, you know, Mardi Gras is it's both good and bad for the city.
Mm-hmm.
In the spirit of New Orleans, hey, you know, that's Mardi Gras.
Mm-hmm.
This is tradition. It goes very deep. It's the, you know, it's the spirit of New Orleans. We party up. We have 2 weeks of partying, get it all out of our system, and then at 12 o'clock at night, shuts down, and, you know, and it's over. And,
right.
You know, we go on. But for those people who are displaced, this is a slap in the face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is like saying, you know, we know you don't have a home, but, you know,
but we're going to party anyway.
Party on.
We're going to party anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, I've heard, and being a local, I see both sides of it.
Right.
It hurts me and it, you know, for those people. But at the same time, you know, I want to go and participate in it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the city's bankrupt. They don't have the money to put Mardi Gras on, you know. So, and it is going to be a scaled down version, and it will not be the same, because a lot of those people who made Mardi Gras just aren't there.
Right.
You know, so it's you know, there's both sides of it, and yeah, it's a crying shame, you know, flat out.
Yes, I agree with you there. And I'm glad to see that you're more emotionally invested in this than Daniel. I love
Cold
Daniel. Because Daniel's
the
trying.
The total analytical type.
Yeah, Daniel's trying hard to be really balanced and, you know.
I get pissed off if you are.
Daniel really, he came down, he donated 4 months of his life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we didn't get any money. We struggled through the whole thing. And he, you know, the whole time he'd be like, you know, I'm not affected. I'd be like crying every day.
Right.
A roller coaster of emotions. And then at the end, you know, it all hit him like, wow, you know, it's really starting to seep in. Because, you know, the thing is you think after it happens, you think it's going to get better.
Right.
And
right.
then when you see that it's not getting any better,
right.
It's depressing.
It's very depressing.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes a funk, and then it's hard to get out of that funk.
So is the goal of this film is to be able to show it across the country so that we can raise money to support people? When's the film out? When can we show it here? When can we bring people out and talk about how to organize and work together to make sure that even if those folks from New Orleans and the surrounding areas can't speak for themselves, that we certainly can speak for them?
Well, the goal of the film is definitely to just help people see and understand what's going on and what is happening, and also to, you know, I wanted to be able to help in any way that I could. So
mm-hmm.
this was the way I found that I could help, was to give people a voice. And
mm-hmm.
and it was amazing how people would thank me after and say, you know, that really was good for me to
mm-hmm.
be, it's good to know somebody cares, and it's good to know that this story's not going to be lost. You know, so, and yes, I want to get this movie in the hands of everybody. I want to send it to our president and, you know, all our people who really should be seeing it, because this is the story that's not in the news. You know, they show little snippets, but they
right.
don't follow through. They don't show, they show the house, but they don't pan the block. And then they might show the block, but they don't pan the entire neighborhood. And then you go even further, and it's the entire city, you know. And then outside of the city, the region,
90,000
you know,
square miles.
It was a nice visual to know that only 3 miles of Portland would be saved, and it would probably be the Barron's area.
Whose neighborhood would be saved?
The thing is that this could happen at any point.
Yes.
Anywhere,
right.
And say it happens in the Bay Area where I am. You know, is Oakland going to become like, you know, what they did? You know, they're going to be trying to keep people out of the rich neighborhood. You know, we can't let this happen again, period.
Absolutely.
You know, it's unacceptable. And that's what I keep coming back to. It's just like, if people want to see this movie right now, what I'm doing is I'm making like a 10 to 15 minute short about with the theme of personal stories of migration and displacement. That's for Black History Month.
Okay.
After that, you know, I'm going to do a full-length documentary about my journey home.
Oh, wonderful.
So it's going to be, you know, I'm going to try to give people a sense of Louisiana, because Louisiana really is, it's each region has its own little culture. And, you know, we think of New Orleans as, you know, as what Hollywood shows us, and people don't really understand what it's like down there. So I'm going to try to give people a feel of that.
Wonderful. I'd love to get a copy of that 10 to 15 minute kind of clip, and please let me know when the film is ready for distribution. I would love to help to, you know, set something up at the Hollywood Theater or someplace like that where we could have a community event and community conversations. But I'm really interested in, after the film, after the emotion, to give people very concrete things that they can do to support residents of getting their rights restored. Because basically, we're, you know, it's like why they started calling them evacuees. No, it wasn't evacuees.
It was refugees.
Refugees. They started calling them refugees like the day after.
Right.
And
right.
It talk about the most appalling thing. So they already decided the day after Katrina hit that these aren't American citizens really. So we're just calling them refugees so that we don't have to actually deal with them like we're supposed to deal with American citizens. So that's what I would love to help you keep up the good work. I think you guys did a phenomenal job. And it's really important to have these voices be heard and be the voices that are actually informing policymakers as we move forward. And I'm gonna go. We got a couple of callers left. We've got a very short period of time left.
I have one quick plug.
Okay, wait. Let me. Did you have one last thing that you had to say before we moved on?
Let Daniel have his plug, and I'll say goodbye.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
When people are asking ways they can help, there's many ways. One of them specifically, I can tell you right now, is this film has been completely supported by donations.
Mm.
And now we're digging into our own personal pockets and our own student loans.
Right.
Or even borrowing money from people who are supposed to be fixing their roofs down in Louisiana.
Wow.
To help support this film. You can visit filmkatrina.com. You can go on PayPal. I'm selling photography on my website. Mm-hmm. I have a very beautiful fine art photography. It's beautiful stuff. That can help us get back down there, tell the story. We're not we don't have nonprofit status,
right. But
we are down there working hard, volunteering. It's been 5 months now. I've volunteered my time.
Okay. Next caller. Good morning, caller. Please be short, sweet, to the point. We're almost out of time.
Good morning.
Good morning.
A couple of things. There is an organization called ACORN that is a national organization that was based in New Orleans.
That's correct.
That unites, it's for the working poor, and they are doing a lot down there, and
there are
other organizations. So I would say it's not just the rich and the famous that are still there, and many, many volunteers are needed. The other thing I think we need to look at is not just criminal negligence, but possible criminal intent. There were many, many different sources of help, including the Chicago mayor, who had hundreds of fire and rescue workers that said that, can we help? Can we be there?
Mm-hmm.
And Amtrak had offered to evacuate people during this time, and they were prevented.
That's good.
Many folks were prevented from giving the help that was needed. So to me, that's not negligence. That's intent. And so it comes down to, we as a people have to get together and commit to each other that when there are disasters and crises, that we will be there for each other. And despite the government intervention.
Appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Got to move on. Have a great day. Appreciate the insight. Yes, ACORN. Out of Louisiana was there from the beginning. They continue to work very hard, but quite frankly, they need more help. Next caller, good morning. Welcome to K-Boo. You have, in fact, 30 seconds
okay.
to make your point.
Here's my question, actually. Taking further what the lady just said,
mm-hmm.
my understanding that there were help was offered from other countries.
That's correct.
And this, and they turned them away. And so how do you respond to that when, in terms of identifying as she said, the intent of this administration?
Absolutely. I mean, there was times where you know, they said, well, thank you very much for the offer. We're going to evaluate based on the possibility if we can accept it. I mean, if we can't even organize our own people to get together and go down and help to organize 75 or 100 doctors from Cuba to come and help, that's, you're asking too much from the government, unfortunately.
Okay, we're going to take one last call, and then we're going to wrap up the program today. Hello, caller. You've got 30 seconds or less to make your point or statement.
Thank you. My main statement is that most people, and myself included, have one home in our lifetime. We can save and do everything and buy a home and have what's called the American dream. Well, if something was taken from me 6 months later, I don't think I would be able to have saved again what I've saved all my life to
exactly.
have at this point. So I think it's very impossible to expect that a lot of other people would as well.
Absolutely. And most people did not have insurance on their homes.
Yeah.
And even if they had insurance, so, okay, so,
it.
I mean, here's the catch 22. Here's the catch 22 of folks that pay insurance on a regular basis. So, if you had home owner's coverage and the levee broke and your home was destroyed, they said, well, we can't cover it because you don't have flood coverage, right? But you have insurance coverage on your home. If they determined that it was, in fact, not the flood, but it was the wind damage, right? Then they say, oh, well, we can't cover it because we don't cover wind damage, right?
Right.
So all of us who pay insurance on a regular basis, I mean, that's my biggest fear. It's like I've been paying insurance my entire life,
mm-hmm.
and the one time you need it, which in New Orleans was a perfect example,
right.
mm-hmm.
we have an insurance industry that is actually set up to remove your money from you and to
and
find
to
any reason necessary, any reason they can think of to not follow through on the claim. And so that's another issue that I think we need to really look at long term about how we shift this insurance industry so that they are held accountable as well. Because I think that there are a lot of people who thought they were covered who found out that they were not after the fact.
One thing I'd like to say is I know that there are a lot of people who are interested in the Katrina story. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of coverage.
Mm.
So what I kind of feel like saying is that we're going out to New Orleans and we're doing the research. We're finding out what you need to know. And I'm really encouraging people to stay up on the film, to contact me if you have opinions or questions. You want to help. You know a place where we can hold a fundraiser. Mm. You can help me buy equipment, things like that. Please stay in touch with us. We know people want to help. So you can go to filmkatrina.com or to my website, which is danieltaras.com, DanielTaras. Either one. People of Louisiana really need your help. We need help to help them. Anything you can do. And to stay current and do what you can to remember what's going on down there is really what the people down there need most.
And not only that, you know, we have over 400 families in Oregon that were displaced from Katrina. And so those families are going to school with our kids and shopping in our malls and,
mm-hmm.
you know, trying to survive here in a very new community. And so we should also be making sure that those individuals don't end up being homeless because of this
exactly.
arbitrary timeline
right.
that FEMA has set.
Right.
Because clearly, locally, we don't have the resources to take care of our own homeless. And so adding additional homeless people to homeless roles is just insane.
And I've been away for 3.5 months, so I'm mm-hmm. not even up to date on what's going on in Portland. If you happen to be involved with the local families from New Orleans that are in Portland, contact me. Let me know. I'd like to connect with them. Maybe they want to tell their story. Trying to help keep me in the loop if I can be a little bit of point of reference for people.
Well, Daniel, you've been informative. I've really appreciated your insights, some of the stories that you shared from volunteering your time to be in New Orleans to make sure those stories were not lost.
Mm-hmm.
After the storms. I really appreciate what you did. If it sounded like I was challenging you, it's
Please
because
do.
I was.
Yes, there you go. And I deserve
Don't
it.
Don't be mistaken.
I know.
Point.
I'm sorry. I'm a little, I guess I'm a little too balanced. on Stacey Farrow.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't worry. I'm plenty pissed
wait,
off.
Wait, wait. Fox News came to mind when he said that. Fair and balanced. Oh, my gosh. We don't need more fair and balanced. This is Joanne Bowman.
And this is Dave Mazza.
And you've been listening to Voices from the Edge. It's been our pleasure to be here. We'll see you next time. Same place, same channel, same station. Bye.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. Can't fool some